Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Aftershock Monday episode, and I hope you all got a chance to listen to the other Aftershock episode that was released today. It's an interview with Ryan Parrott talking about his Dead Day series, which is just fascinating, starting with the question of what would you do? What would the world be like if the deceased got to come back for one night periodically? It was a great conversation with Ryan. Obviously, it's a huge subject and one that's endlessly fascinating and has all kinds of moral implications about society and the way people would live their lives if they knew that they had a chance to come back and that sort of thing. So highly encourage you to go listen to that. This episode, however, is about a different Ryan Parrott property. This one is about the series Oberon, which was a 5-issue series he did with Aftershock, which I think is really underrated. And, you know, as many things, especially with smaller publishers, it is very dependent on sales to be allowed to continue. So there is 5 issues of the first arc and a trade available. And the story, while it doesn't have a complete ending, it's a good stopping place. So if you do pick it up and you do read it, it is a fun world and a good story to kind of experience, but clearly there's more to this world that Ryan Parrott has created. And it would be great if at some time in the future, Oberon could come back. So I've talked about the first issue, maybe two, on previous Aftershock Mondays. I thought with the great conversation I had with Ryan about Dead Day, that it would be a good time to also talk about Oberon, because again, I think it's a very good series. It's worth your time, especially if you have children of a certain age, 8, 9, 10, and you're trying to get them into reading. This is a great book to kind of experience with them and read to them. It makes a great bedtime story, has a lot of cool imagery from the artist Miloš Slavković. And again, it's just a really great series that I think not enough people picked up. So as I said, written and created by Ryan Parrott, Miloš Slavković is the artist, Charles Pritchard does the letters. And in the first issue, we meet the king of the fairies, or the deposed king of the fairies, Oberon. You know, he is a very famous character from, you know, folklore, and he's traditionally the king of the fairies. And in the first issue, we meet him, and we also meet the other main character of the series, a little girl named Bonnie, who lives with her family in San Francisco. She's homeschooled. She's very precocious. And one night while she's walking home from the library, she's attacked by this giant trash monster, basically. And Oberon appears to her and escapes, or rather helps her to escape from this this big trash monster. We learn later that Oberon had kind of set it up. You know, he's very much I'll call him a con man. He's very slippery. He's very shady. He rarely tells the truth, or at least not the whole truth. You know, he's very much concerned with himself and not so much concerned with anybody else. So everybody's being manipulated. Everybody is sort of secondary to what his will is and his desires. And his desires to get his crown back. He wants to be the king of the fairies again. But unfortunately, nobody trusts him. And even when he was the king, there were a lot of people that didn't like him. You know, they started off liking him, but it seems in the clues of the story, or through the context of the story, what we get from Ryan is that Oberon sort of started to go mad with power. He just has whatever that is in his personality that he gets he's overconfident, I guess is the best way to put it. And so he doesn't want to take anybody else's opinion. He doesn't want to, you know, hear what anybody else has to say about a particular situation. He thinks he always knows best, and that's not always the case. And so it kind of snowballs, and he eventually is deposed. But we'll talk about a little bit more about that in a little bit. But yes, as Bonnie is being attacked. This little human girl, or supposedly human girl, is attacked. Oberon shows up, opens up his cloak, and tells Bonnie, hey, you know, run in here. This is how you can escape, get away from this trash monster. And so Oberon's cape is actually a gateway to the fairy world. And so she lands there. It's this, you know, charming forest, and the sun is shining and the birds are singing. And then Oberon appears, and she, you know, she's like, who are you? Take me back. What's going on? And Oberon's like, oh, calm down. This is a forgotten forest. That rot golem was attacking you. It feeds on loneliness and despair. And my name is Oberon, I'm king of the fairies, and I saved you. So Bonnie, you know, she's obviously taken aback by this. Like, hey, what's going on? I thought fairies were just small little things with wings. Like, and Oberon's like, oh, some of us are. And so he gives her a little bit of tour of the Forgotten Forest. She sees unicorns and different sorts of things. And what she really wants to do, though, is go home. And so she's asking Oberon, like, so why did you save me? Why did you bring me here? What is going on, basically? And Oberon tells her, well, you're a very special young girl, and I had to rescue you from the lie that you've been living. Your parents aren't really your parents. They kidnapped you years ago, and I've been looking for you for a long time, actually, and Earth was the last place I thought you'd be. So Bonnie is obviously very confused by this, doesn't know what to think. She's like, no, that this can't be true. Fairies lie, send me back. And Oberon says, okay, if that's what you want, but you know, I can, there are things you can look for that will basically prove what I'm saying is true. Even the books on your bookshelf are alive. They were carefully selected. They watch you to make sure you aren't going to escape. And but if you want to go home, no problem. I will send you home. So he takes her back to San Francisco, takes her back to the world. And again, Oberon manipulating, saying, hey, I don't take any pleasure in giving you this news, in telling you that, you know, the truth, supposedly. But I'll never bother you again if that's what you want, but I am your friend. And then he gives Bonnie a bell and says, if you're ever in trouble, you can ring it and I'll come and save you. So then he returns to his home, which is in a treehouse, and to his servant Nicholas. And meanwhile, Bonnie goes home. She tells her parents everything that happened. It's like, you told me you weren't your parents. And the parents say, well, you know, we don't know what to tell you. We are your parents. Obviously, whoever this person was, he's sick in the head. And, you know, we need to talk about this in private. So you didn't do anything wrong, and we love you and you're safe, but we need to go discuss this. Which right away you start thinking, well, why would they need to discuss it, right? Like in private. So maybe there's some truth to what Oberon was saying. So meanwhile, Bonnie's thinking about what Oberon said about the books. So she goes and takes one off of her shelf, starts to rip a page out, something she never would have considered doing before, with how much she loves books. And the books come to life. And that, to her, that's proof. As these books come to life and they're floating around the room and talking, and her parents hear the commotion, they come running in, and she says, he was telling the truth. Bonnie says, he was telling the truth. Who are you? They're trying to calm her down, saying they can explain everything. And Bonnie's had it, though. She's just overwhelmed with this discovery she's made. So she rings the bell. Oberon comes and takes her away. And the parents are left to wonder, well, what do we do now? They say, okay, we'll contact Titania and tell her Oberon has the child. So that's how the first issue ends. And then in the second issue, we see that Bonnie is now in Oberon's dwelling, where we saw him have dinner earlier. And she wakes up, she has breakfast, she meets Oberon's servant, Nicholas, and he's telling her kind of his story about how he serves Oberon, and Oberon's this great guy, and he had saved Nicholas from kind of this bad existence, I guess you'd say, on Earth. I mean, he had been in a car accident and his parents had died, and he was stuck in the hospital, and he wasn't real happy about being where he was, and Oberon came and saved him. And so he's very grateful and very, very loyal. We also see a scene early on in the second issue where Oberon and Titania marry. So at one time, these two who are now foes were actually joined. And it was, in fact, Queen Titania who deposed Oberon and exiled him because she felt she had no choice. He was abusing his power. So whatever tie Bonnie has to Queen Titania is likely the reason that Oberon is interested in her. So she Oberon takes Bonnie to meet another fairy who is a fallen fairy. And we learn later on that she's actually the wicked stepmother from Cinderella. So basically what happens is this fairy was on Earth and fell in love with Cinderella by just watching her and seeing what a beautiful child she was, and eventually steals her away from her own mother, which is against the rules. And so then Titania and Oberon punish her, and she's supposed to be destroyed, but Oberon, not out of mercy, but out of let me sort of pull some puppet strings and manipulate so that I can have somebody who owes me favors at some time in the future that I may take advantage of, saves this Mother Mae, is what her name is. And so she does in fact owe Oberon. And so Oberon wants to know, okay, why did Titania have Bonnie hidden away on Earth, guarded by these two servants of hers? Is she perhaps the legendary Lovette, which is this child of both human and fairy lineage, who is very powerful and a very important magic user? And so what Oberon wants from Mother Mae is to have Mother Mae put Bonnie in this maze called, I think it's called the Endless Labyrinth. And this Endless Labyrinth, only magic users can find their way out. If you're not a powerful magic user, you'll be stuck in the maze forever. And eventually one of the evil denizens of the maze will find you and eat you. And so it kind of goes to show that Oberon is only out for himself, because when he's speaking to Nicholas about it, like, okay, so if she can't find her way out, you'll go and rescue her? Like, well, no, if she can't find her way out, then she doesn't have any magic. She's of no use to me and she'll just die. And he could really care less. He only wants Bonnie if she's of use to him. So while Bonnie's in the maze, we see that Nicholas and Oberon are out running errands, doing certain things, buying supplies and what have you, when they are attacked by a goblin who also works for Titania. And Oberon only chooses to let the goblin live if the goblin agrees to give Oberon his eyes. It's like, why are you spying on us? I should kill you now. But the goblin does agree in order to save his own life. Meanwhile, Bonnie is unable to find her way out of the maze. And that's sort of where the second issue ends. So in the third issue, it picks up with Bonnie still stuck in the maze, running from a human pig hybrid creature that got lost in the maze. It was a little boy who stole his brother's beloved little pet piglet and took it to the endless maze to hide it there away forever, but got lost in the endless maze and was trapped in there for so long that eventually him and the piglet became one entity, basically. And so he's one of the denizens of the maze that will eat people if they cannot find their way out. So it looks like that's to be Bonnie's fate. She's going to be eaten by this pig creature. And Nicholas, who kind of bonded with her when Bonnie was there in the treehouse of Oberon, says, I'll go and rescue her. And Oberon says, no, I'm sorry. There's only one way she escapes alive, and that's if I go myself. And Mother Mae is surprised, like, wait, you're going to go in there and risk your life to save a human child? Maybe traveling to Earth has changed you after all. And he says, yes, I'm full of surprises now, and decides that he is going to go and rescue her. Again, not for the reasons you might think. This is not altruistic on the behalf of Oberon. He's doing it again for his own purposes. So meanwhile, we see Laura, who is Bonnie's earthly mother, really her guardian, reporting to Queen Titania, apologizing for having lost her, and says, I'll accept whatever punishment you feel is appropriate. And Queen Titania says, no, you did more than just watch over the child. You loved her. There will be no punishment. I am not my ex-husband. Lord Oberon is a silver-tongued serpent, and somehow he managed to slither his way into my heart and onto this throne. And we all knew he would go to great lengths to reclaim his kingdom, but the fact that he's risking all of creation, I must have wounded him far deeper than I imagined. And what she's talking about there is there is a threat to all creation, both the world of the Fae as well as our own real world. And they're called the Nevermen. And they are held at bay by a lantern that is guarded by these knights that have passed on that duty from father to son over many, many generations. And for whatever reason, the Lovette, who Bonnie is purported to be, what Oberon believes her to be, is linked, her survival is linked with the fact that that lantern continues to burn, and the light of that lantern keeps the Nevermen at bay. And the fact that Oberon has gone and kidnapped Bonnie in some way has caused the knight that was currently guarding the lantern to be killed and the light to be extinguished, which will then allow the Nevermen to come and attack the world of Fae. And if the world of Fae is destroyed, then apparently our own world is destroyed. That's sort of what I think is going on. That's a subplot in the first five issues that we would need to have fleshed out in a further volume. So Laura says, okay, my queen, the child Bonnie, I know she's not my blood, but she's got to be terrified. You know, I kept her sheltered from magic, and please let me go search for her. And Queen Titania says, no, I understand that, but I've called in my own assistants, and he will find the child and kill Oberon in the process. So he won't be able to interfere anymore. Meanwhile, Oberon does appear in the maze and does manage to subdue this pig human hybrid creature and rescue Bonnie, which then, of course, just reinforces this trust that Bonnie has in Oberon, because he's appearing to her now that he's rescued her twice, when in fact he was the one that sent the rot golem after her in San Francisco in the first place. He's the one that put her there in the maze and was going to just allow her to die if she didn't prove that she had magic, which she hasn't done. But then he changes his mind and thinks better of it, because he thinks, well, if Titania went through the trouble of hiding this child on Earth, even if she isn't the Lovett, even if she doesn't have magic, I still might be able to use her as a bargaining chip to get my way with Titania. So that's what ultimately led him to decide to go and rescue her. And this is what Oberon tells Mother Mayhi, because she says, I don't understand why you would go in and rescue her. Why would you take the chance? If the child isn't the chosen one, then I know you didn't save her out of the kindness of your heart. So what's your angle? And that's when Oberon says, yeah, no matter who she is, she's being safeguarded by the queen, and that can be exploited. So when Mother Mayhi hears this, she decides that maybe she can get something she wants. So in the dead of night in Oberon's treehouse, Mother Mayhi goes and tells Bonnie, hey, I'm taking you. We're going to go do another test. And she tries to sneak out with Bonnie. But of course, Oberon expected it all along, that Mother Mayhi would try to double cross him, and he appears there to try to stop her. So that's where the third issue ends. And then in the fourth issue, we get a fight where Mother Mayhi is eventually killed by Oberon, and he tells her, you know, just between you and me, even if you hadn't betrayed me, I was still going to kill you violently. And as Mother Mayhi dies, she gives a prophecy. She says, the Nevermen are coming. The Nevermen are here. They'll die upon your history and feast upon your fear. If you turn to face them, the never men have won, for as they slit and slice you, you've forgotten when they're done. So it's clear that because the lantern has been extinguished and Oberon has taken Bonnie, that the never men are on their way. So once Mother Mayhi is dispatched of, Nicholas and Oberon and Bonnie return to his home, and they say, well, that was a promising expedition, but it's time for us to get some rest. And I have a night of triviality and fun and festiveness in mind. Let's rest tonight. And tomorrow is a new day, and we can hopefully have some fun and forget about the terrible events of this evening. Meanwhile, the knight who has been killed, who guarded the lantern that always shone to keep the Nevermen at bay, his squire goes to see Queen Titania to tell her about the death of the knight and the fact that he believes the Nevermen are coming. His name is Griblet. And after he tells his story, Queen Titania knights him, Sir Griblet of Avalon, and sends him off to bring forth proof that the Nevermen have returned, because he hasn't actually seen them. His proof is the fact that Sir Thornberry, who was the knight that he was a squire for, and one of those knights whose lineage had guarded the lantern for generations, he was so skilled that there's no way anybody of this world, the world of Fae, could have bested him. So the fact that he's dead and the lantern has been extinguished must mean that the Nevermen are back. But when Queen Titania asks him, did you actually see these creatures? He says, no. And so she knights him and sends him off on a quest to bring back proof. Then we see the goblin, Gordle. This is the same goblin that had been spying on Nicholas and Oberon previously. We see him make an appearance in Titania's throne room. And just as Griblet is leaving, and he says, he's a little short for your taste, but he does have a nice pair of legs. And Queen Titania is very taken aback by that. Like, I tolerate your comments because of your sword, but you forget yourself. And Gordle says, forgive me, my queen, but, and then he's interrupted by his own voice. But we know it's actually a different voice because the word balloon is different. And it's Oberon's voice coming from Gordle. And he says, but Gordle isn't the one speaking. It is I, your husband. His eyes are now my eyes. And it's time we had a proper face-to-face, as repulsive as it might be. So now we know what Oberon meant earlier when he said that he was taking Gordle's eyes. He can see through Gordle's eyes and speak through Gordle's mouth. And so this is the way that he is there to talk about getting his throne back. And Titania says, you know, I wondered how Gordle survived his encounter with you. You're not one for mercy. And Oberon says, no, all mercy comes with a price, and for some, even a crown. So Titania wants to know, why did you kidnap this innocent girl? Why are you risking her life? And he says, I want my throne back, right? I mean, it's all about my throne. I was a trusting fool. And, you know, you conspired to dethrone me. And Titania is saying, I don't even know who you are anymore. Like, what happened to the fairy king who brokered 1,000 years of peace and who picked ice lilies just to see me smile? Where's the fairy that I fell in love with? And Oberon doesn't want to hear it. You know, he says, all it will take is one word from you. And I would have bent to your will, just as I always have. But instead, you know, you betrayed me. And he can't get over that betrayal. And so Titania says, return the child to me, and I'll do what I can. And that's not enough for Oberon. He says, I return the child to you the moment that you give me my throne back and you exile yourself. You leave the world of Fae. You leave Avalon forever. And then I'll give you the child back. And Titania says that's impossible. The throne's impossible. I can't give it back to you. But if you bring me the child, I will end your exile. You won't be exiled from Avalon. You can come back, you know, to the kingdom that rules the world of Fae. And that, you know, that's the best that I can offer you. And Oberon thinks about it and says, I'm supposed to trust a fairy. And she says, well, trust me or not, the next move is yours. This is the best that I can offer. So there's a big masquerade ball. It's called the Masquerade of the Immortal, where all manner of creatures come to dance and listen to music. And, you know, it's a traditional sort of ball where everybody's wearing masks and wearing very fine clothing and, you know, polite society, that sort of thing. And so that is where the supposed exchange will take place. So Oberon, Nicholas, and Bonnie all don their finery, and they head to the Immortal Masquerade, where many of the fairies that are there speak to Oberon, and it's clear that he's not liked. It's clear that he's not trusted. It's clear that he has had dealings with many of them before to varying degrees of success. He's double-crossed some, lies have been told. But the whole masquerade itself is supposed to be neutral ground, as it were. So meanwhile, Nicholas, showing his sort of affection for Bonnie, asks her to dance, and they are twirling about on the floor while Oberon is trying to find out where exactly Titania is. And he learns that she is in a room off of the main ballroom, and he goes there to meet with her to make their deal. And he starts thinking, why would she be here? Why would she have somebody tell me where she was so easily? Would it be so that I just walk through a door without thinking? And really, when she says end my exile, what she means is to have me killed, because technically that would end my exile. And he thinks to himself better of actually opening the door and says, never trust a fairy. Takes off his mask, turns around and says, well, whoever you are, you're making a mistake. And a voice off panel says, I'm afraid not, old friend. Fairies don't make mistakes, only poor bargains. And it's Robin Goodfellow, otherwise known as Puck, who is there to kill him. She is the, or he rather, is the servant of Titania that she mentioned to Laura that was going to take care of retrieving Bonnie and killing Oberon once and for all. So in issue 5, while Oberon and Puck fight, we learn that Puck used to be the servant of Oberon for centuries, kind of fulfilled the role that Nicholas does now. And didn't necessarily, they were really good friends, but they didn't necessarily, Puck was not necessarily treated the best. You know, again, as Oberon was in power, and that power seemed to corrupt him in some way. And Oberon's even thinking, you know, if I'm honest, Puck's the closest thing I've ever had to a real friend. I never imagined he'd side against me, especially with Titania. And they have fought so many times, and it's entirely possible that Puck could kill Oberon. Meanwhile, back in the ballroom, as Bonnie and Nicholas are dancing, all of a sudden everybody seems to disappear. And this dark hooded cloaked figure comes up to Bonnie and sort of speaks in riddles, saying, never is the night not watching, but rarely does the child see who, never does the clock stop clocking, and never does this fairy speak true. And when Bonnie asks, who are you? He sort of reveals this metallic demonic face and says, we are the Nevermen. And Bonnie says, well, what do you want with me? And he says, to end the child of lies. Because again, Bonnie is a child of the fairies. The Nevermen believe that the fairies are nothing but liars. And that speaking in rhyme obviously is a hallmark of the Nevermen. And then Nicholas grabs her and shakes her and says, Bonnie, are you all right? You just stopped dancing all of a sudden. And Bonnie informs him something's here, the Nevermen. And Nicholas says, okay, we need to find Oberon immediately. And he pulls a bell out of his pocket, much like the bell we saw that Bonnie had early on in the story to summon Oberon. He rings it, and soon Bonnie and Nicholas find themselves in the company of Oberon, right as he's about to be overwhelmed by Puck. And with the added help of Bonnie's powers all of a sudden manifesting, Oberon is saved. And the power is so great and so overwhelming that Puck gasps as he's kind of bound up by this magical energy that flows out of Bonnie's eyes. And Nicholas says she is the Lovette, right? I mean, maybe she couldn't find her way out of the maze. Maybe she wasn't stressed out enough or wasn't traumatic enough for her power to manifest. But it's clear that she actually is the Lovette. And Oberon thinks, I never had a doubt. Well, you know, what do you know? And so Puck is captured and Oberon is safe. And as they're standing there trying to figure out what to do next, all of a sudden the Nevermen burst through the door and they address Oberon saying, give us the girl and you live, King of the Fae. So rather than hand over Bonnie, Oberon once again opens his cloak and allows Bonnie and Nicholas to escape, and then follows them, and they go back to Oberon's place, and Bonnie's kind of asking who the Nevermen are. They, you know, I usually love riddles, but he said they were the end of many things, the beginning of something else. And Oberon's trying to explain and saying, well, they're mythological entities. Can't really trust them. can't expect them to be forthcoming, but whatever they want with you, you know, I promise that we'll find out. And Nicholas says, well, Lord Oberon, maybe we should do what Bonnie asks and send her back to Earth. You know, she seemed to have been safe there. And Bonnie says, yeah, I do want to go home. Even if they're not my real parents, I want to go where things make sense, where I don't have to be so scared all the time. And you can tell by the look on Oberon's face, he's not pleased with this this line of thinking. But he, ever the trickster, ever the liar, ever duplicitous, he says, oh, of course, you're not my prisoner. Nicholas will keep watch on you tonight. We'll send you back to Earth tomorrow at first light. So meanwhile, Puck goes back to Titania to report what happened. And she's not real happy with what has gone on and says, well, you probably shouldn't have taken his crown. And Titania says, but he had to be stopped. He was going power mad. And Puck's response to that is, really? You say he was a tyrant, but isn't that what you've become? I warned you that he would destroy us all. And you know, here we are. And Titania, you know, you can tell she's sort of distraught and worried that Puck is right. And says, I don't know, like, what do I do? What's the answer? And Puck says, well, you're asking the wrong question. You shouldn't be asking what you should do. You should be asking what he would do. And she says, well, he would lie and cheat and burn the palace down and do everything he could to get what he wanted. And if he didn't like the rules of the game, he'd change the rules. And Puck says, see, I can see why you two were married. So she thinks about it and says, okay, Puck, fetch peas blossom, moth, cobweb, and mustard seed. And we're off to make a deal with the Nevermen. And we're going to get back my daughter. So truth is that Bonnie is actually the daughter of Queen Titania. She's actually a princess after all. And who her father is, we don't yet know. But the fact that she's willing to make a deal with the Nevermen, I mean, that is, these guys are destined to destroy everything. And she's off to make a deal with them. So what that deal might be, how it might work out in her favor, we don't quite know. So back at Oberon's house, he betrays Nicholas, once again showing how much he cares about no one but himself. And Nicholas, this beloved servant who had always worshipped Oberon and was very loyal and did whatever he asked, lies there dying, saying, you know, why? And he says, well, because I need to use you. I'm sorry. There was no other way for this to happen. But you know, you can take solace that your death served a noble purpose. And in his final moments, Nicholas realizes that he actually hates Oberon. Oberon has betrayed him, never truly loved him. And as Nicholas dies, Oberon says, "Sleep well, my friend." So Bonnie's asleep in her bed. She hears a cry and comes running out into the hall, finds Oberon there, supposedly wounded, says, "What is it? What happened?" And Oberon says, "Be careful, child. The house isn't safe." And Oberon has a small cut on his arm and he's bleeding. And she asks if he's okay. He says, "Yes, but please go back to your room and lock the door. I'll find Nicholas." And now Bonnie's distraught. You know, she's very much bonded with Nicholas, very much friends. So she goes running off. She finds his body, and next to it finds a mask of the Nevermen. So immediately assumes that it's the fault of the Nevermen. You know, clearly all this has been set up, and Bonnie is being manipulated to the nth degree by Oberon. And he says, "You know, I heard something in the house, attack me from the shadows. I should never have let Nicholas stand guard. Should have taken you both away right away." And so Bonnie asks, well, can't you fix it? And Oberon says, "You know, there's some things that are even beyond my power. You know, it has limits. I have no way of bringing him back." And as they cover Nicholas's body, Oberon is saying, "You know, Nicholas cared for you very deeply at the Endless Labyrinth. He begged me to go in after you. I never had a son, but if I did," again, it's all manipulation, right? So that Bonnie will use her powers as the Lovette to choose to stay, right? Oberon says, "Well, now I'll take you home. You'll be safe." And she says, "No, you said I'm the Lovette, right? That I have this ancient magic inside me and I can make the Nevermen pay for what they've done." And Oberon says, "Well, I don't know what you're capable of." And then Bonnie asks, "Well, will you teach me? Will you, you know, help me so I can avenge Nicholas?" And Oberon says, "Well, I can, but it might require you to change somewhat. You know, learning fairy magic changes people's hearts. It can darken their souls." And in the emotion of the moment, Bonnie says, I don't care. Help me get revenge so the Nevermen will pay for what they did. And if you help me, I'll help you get your throne back. What do you say? Do we have a deal?" And Oberon holds out his hand and they shake. And he tells us, the reader, because throughout the entire story, the narrator for the whole Oberon series is Oberon himself. And he tells us at that moment, as him and Bonnie are shaking hands, "I know you hate me right now, and I don't blame you. But remember, without loss, there's no growth, and no one in this story is truly innocent. Everyone lies, especially to the ones we love. I promise it might not look that way, but everything will work out in the end. At least that is for me, anyway, until we meet again." And that's the end of the story. And that's all it's about, right, for Oberon. Everything will work out in the end, and everything will be fine, and it'll be happily ever after. For Oberon, that's all he cares about. He doesn't care if there's a happy ending for everybody else, as long as he gets his way. So again, it's a good stopping point for the story, but it's certainly not the end of the story. And I really wish we could get another volume of this. I mentioned when I first started talking about the story, how I think it makes such a great bedtime story. And I think it really does, especially for sort of middle-aged children, because you can, you know, talk to them about concepts like love and telling the truth and betrayal and loyalty and those kind of things. And there's a lot of adventure here, really great visuals in terms of seeing unicorns and fairies and goblins and all kinds of great characters. The knight that guards the lantern that's always supposed to shine, you know, a humanoid frog, the pig creature in the labyrinth. So none of it's scary. By Miloš Slavkovic, it's all, you know, very cartoon-like, great line work, great storytelling, good facial expressions. So the color work is also done very, very well throughout the series. So again, I think it's a great story to give kids, because it does introduce them to some concepts that are a little more sophisticated. You know, I wouldn't recommend this for like a 4 or 5 year old or something like that. You know, it's, you want to get conversation starting with older kids about some of these concepts. It's a great story for that. And hoping at some point that we might get the end of the story of the next volume. Next time I talk to Ryan, I may mention to him if he ever has considered doing like a Kickstarter or something like that. But I know the details on that or what may need to happen for that might be kind of complicated, because he did publish the first volume at Aftershock, and I know they own some percentage of the rights there. So it's up to them to want to put out a second volume. And again, it all comes down to sales. And I don't think this one sold really, really well, because it came out at a time when things were like super crowded. I think if it had come out now, it might do a little bit better. So anyway, like I said, I wanted to talk about it because I think it is a really good story. And that's why I would love to have the next volume. But I know there currently aren't any plans for it, but it is worth reading. I think it's a great story, wonderful characterization, great dialogue, the speech of Oberon and Titania and a lot of these fanciful creatures isn't just your, you know, run-of-the-mill dialogue that you and vocabulary that you hear every day. It's a little more fancy, a little more flowery, and that helps to kind of set the tone and mood of the story as well. So again, really great story. I recommend it. Check it out if you think you like it. If you have, you know, kids around that age, they might really enjoy it as well. So that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. As always, I want to thank you all for joining me, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.